I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 16th of June. Thanks to Judith Sears Poisson for filling in for me yesterday. And here we go with today. The Atlantic had an interesting piece recently on the census, and it's titled "Republicans Try to Curtail the Census." The GOP backs legislation that would make the American Community Survey effectively voluntary. It goes on to say, why does the government want to know how many toilets you have in your home? Well, it's central to a dispute between congressional Republicans and the Obama administration over the kinds of questions that the Census Bureau can ask in its mandatory surveys. I didn't know this, but in addition to the census that is done every 10 years, every year the government sends 3.5 million Americans a very lengthy questionnaire asking lots of questions about their living situation, employment status. It replaced the long-form portion of the official census about 10 years ago. It's become politically explosive, and who would have thought that it would? Something politically explosive dealing with the census. So this hour of the program, we'll be speaking with the co-director of the Census Project. It's a 1,000-member stakeholder organization that is advocating for full funding for the 10-year census and the companion American Community Survey, which is done every year. Phil is also the former associate director for communications of the U.S. Census Bureau, and we'll be welcoming phone calls for Phil during the course of the hour. The number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are also on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. Hi, Phil. Thanks very much for being with us.
Happy to be here today.
We're familiar, most of us, with every 10 years, but I was not very familiar with this American Community Survey, which is done every year. How did that start, Phil?
Let's go back to the beginning. As your listeners may know, the taking of the census is actually within in the mandate of the Constitution, our founding fathers, in order to make sure that we redistributed political power based on population trends, mandated a census. So in 1790, it had a very distinguished pedigree. Thomas Jefferson was the first supervisor of the taking of the first census in his role as Secretary of State. And as he was drawing up questions for what we call the short form, which is basically how many people do you have in your household, how old are they, where do you live, that's the short form. Everybody gets that one every 10 years. James Madison and Benjamin Franklin, two other founding fathers, said to Jefferson, look, we need to know more than that for the socio-political background of our country and to make sure that we're doing things right in terms of how we treat our citizens. So from the very beginning, additional questions to the short form were added in the first instance by Madison and by Franklin. Now I flip forward to 1940. By 1930, the decennial census had 20 or 30 questions on it that were beyond the short form, and they were actually asked of every American. So between 1790 and 1930, there were dozens of questions that are sometimes you might call the genesis of which is the American Community Survey, were asked of all Americans. In 1940, the Census Bureau came up with something called scientific sampling and was able to gut the number of people who got the additional questions to the short form to 1 in 10, and then it was dubbed the long form. And the long form goes to 1 in 10 households. It did between 1940 and 2000. And then in the middle of the last decade, President Bush and Congress basically said, let's do a yearly survey, but it'll be 3.5 million households. If you times that by 10, that's the number of people who used to get the long form. And now we'll just do one-tenth of one-tenth every year, and it'll be a rolling survey so that business and labor and civil rights organizations and state and local government and planners, et cetera, can use the data year by year as opposed to having to have data that's only once every 10 years and pretty much is out of whack by the time we get to the 8th, 9th, or 10th year in every decennial cycle. So that's how we got to the American Community Survey. But as I say, it's a direct line to our founding fathers in 1790.
So who decides what questions will be asked?
Congress. Every question that's asked, and there are more than 50, and I used to be a census taker, and I queried people with the then long form when I was in graduate school, and I'm not going to tell you it doesn't take a while to answer, but every question is mandated by Congress for a particular reason. Congress wants to know the effect of the laws that it passes, and let's remember that $400 billion every year is triggered by the questions that are completed on the American Community Survey. This guides what's called formulaic aid, which was first put in place by President Nixon in the 1970s as part of his new federalism. And formulaic aid, so that it's not distributed to the state and local government in the back rooms, but basically on the basis of statistics and the American Community Survey results, funds everything from public education to health to transportation to roads to veterans benefits. You name any federal benefit that goes to state and local government, it all is triggered by the American Community Survey, and the laws that trigger those sums of money mandate that the Census Bureau take information about how the laws are working and making sure that the laws are triggered by a yearly now survey, the American Community Survey. So that's how it got started, and there's a lot of money riding on this. There is no option B. If this survey were eliminated, we'd go back to the back rooms, and that's the way how federal aid was distributed until formulaic aid under President Nixon was changed in the early 1970s.
So if these questions are so important to deciding where federal dollars are going, it must be important that you get this form, 3.5 million Americans answering this questionnaire. How are those people selected, and how important is it that they fill it out? I would imagine it's very important.
Yes, and that's the reason why, since it is tied to the original census, it's the only other form besides the short form, the decennial census short form, that is mandatory for U.S. citizens and residents to fill out. So it's very important. The what they call the response rate is over 95%, and that ensures the accuracy of this survey down to the community and neighborhood levels, which is very important. So if you wanted to cite a school, you'd know where the school age population was. If you wanted to build a road, you'd know where the cars are coming from. If you wanted to cite a business site for either finding customers or for finding employees, you use the American Community Survey business does do that. So that's the second use of it besides government. Business heavily relies on this, and that's the reason why the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the National Realtors Association and other large industrial entities are in favor of the American Community Survey, because they use it every day for business purposes.
So how do you select who the 3.5 million in Americans will be who get this form?
I remember I said that in 1940 a method was developed called scientific sampling. It was a system developed by the Census Bureau, which has now been mirrored by polling in the United States, but it basically can draw a sample of one every 10 households in the United States with absolute reliability. And from those 1 in 10 households, then 1/10 of those each year are surveyed by the Census Bureau. So 1/10 of 1/10 get the 3.5 million households every year get the survey. So it's a very scientific method. Interestingly enough, the gentleman who came up with this method, a guy named Edward Deming, was the father of quality control, because if you can survey people, you can survey cars coming down an assembly line and decide which ones have faults and which ones don't by pulling cars off the assembly line on a sampling basis. And he is the considered a demi-hero in Japan, because he couldn't sell this concept to the United States and Detroit, and went to Toyota and Honda, and that's how they got their qualitative lead in the 60s and 70s, by using quality control. And it came from a census ex-census employee from the 1930s working on the long form.
Do people get paid to fill out the form?
No. Nobody gets paid, except that we all get paid, because the $400 billion that comes back to communities for schools, roads, transportation, public health, veterans benefits, of course, triggers that money.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk to about the controversy here. Those who are opposed, and it's mostly Republican-led opposition, ask, why does the government want to know how many toilets you have in your home? This is intrusive. And for the second year, the House has passed spending legislation that would make it voluntary by prohibiting the government from enforcing criminal penalties for if you don't fill out this form. Is it too intrusive? Why should we have to know how many toilets you have in your home?
That's a good question, and the answer is there are actually 2 million households in the United States without indoor plumbing. There is a program mandated by Congress to try to address that question. Now, the households are mostly in the rural South and in Appalachia, but they use this data in order to address that problem and to identify communities and neighborhoods where that money should be spent. Another question that is often asked by conservatives, why do people need to know when I leave home and when I return? The simple answer is ROADS, roads. Every road in the United States is subject to the sort of guidelines of the American Community Survey if it has federal funds, and those federal funds are used wisely because we know when people leave from work, when they come home, and what the load of traffic is each day because of the American Community Survey data. Now, on the mandatory question, if you didn't make this survey mandatory, we estimate that the rate of response would drop by 20 to 30%, frankly making the survey useless because it would not allow small communities to be quote unquote counted for purposes of federal funds or for anything else. And so rural communities in particular, ironically, those very communities that are more proportionally served by Republicans than Democrats would be not counted by the Census Bureau under the American Community Survey if it were made voluntary as opposed to mandatory as is present.
Mm. So do you think it might make sense, Phil, to give a small stipend to people for filling this out?
I don't think so. I mean, this to me, this is a duty of citizenship or a duty of residence, because it does go, this survey does go, as does the census, to every resident in the United States, not every citizen, but counts every resident. So I don't think we should pay people to do something that is important for them to do for themselves, for their neighbors, and their communities.
The other question that has been brought up here in a time when some people are very worried about the government spying on us and the reach of the NSA, some are saying that, well, this is just another way for government to spy in the name of national security.
Right. The Census Bureau has a distinguished record in its however many years it is since 1790. There's never been a data breach, and there's never been a sharing of that data. Even in world wars, there's never been a sharing of that data, or to catch a criminal, or whatever where the government has asked the Census Bureau to breach its confidentiality, and it's done it. It doesn't do it. Plus, the data, frankly, the names are stripped off almost immediately, and then it's just it's their aggregate sums. So the lowest block of counting, if you will, is a census tract, and that's usually scores of households in a particular area, and it would be very difficult, if not impossible, to figure out, for instance, where I live in Alexandria, Virginia, based on census tract data. You wouldn't be able to do it.
Hmm. So where do things stand now, Phil, as concerns the American Community Survey? And I understand that there may be some funding questions for the 2020 census.
Well, it's pretty bleak, and letters have been forwarded to the appropriate policymakers on Capitol Hill, by business groups, including the Chamber of Commerce and the National Restaurant Association and the Realtors and the National Automobile Association, but also by the civil rights community as a whole, by local chambers of commerce, including including some in the Midwest and certainly some in Wisconsin. Letters have also been forwarded by people from state and local government. The main entity that represents the governors, the counties, and the cities have sent a letter saying this: that we really have got to fund this. It's penny-wise and pound-foolish not to do this. It is not possible to find another way to replicate the American Community Survey. So we've got to do it on that standpoint. And also, the 2020 census by constitutional mandate has to be taken. And, but what has happened is over the last couple of years, the House of Representatives, sadly on a party line vote almost, the GOP caucus has been against this and has attempted to pass legislation, which has been countered in the Senate, to switch from a mandatory to a voluntary American Community Survey. And then just this year, the House of Representatives cut about $495 million out of the administration's request for the next, for a ramp up on of funds to prepare for the next decennial census and for the American Community Survey. So it would pretty much wipe out all planning for the census that will be next taken at the end of the decade, and it will severely cut, and it would severely cut back funding for the American Community Survey.
Mm. Phil, why do you think it's become such a partisan issue?
Well, I think there's a lot of things going on here. First, there's certainly the politics of what they call the larger question of sequestration. The House and the Senate, unless they can agree, are operating under principles of a declining federal budget. They're trying to get money for all their favorite programs one way or another. Frankly, the Census and the Census Bureau are fairly innocuous places, but unfortunately, there's a ramp-up now occurring for the decennial census where more money is needed to prepare for a more efficient and a better census for 2020. And in order to do that, you need money. And it's a question of a pot of money with a that doesn't have much of a constituency attached to it, where the House has basically gone in and cut this $495 million out of the budget. Plus, There's no arguing that in terms of the American Community Survey, it's an ideological question too. Mostly libertarian members of Congress are opposed to the government asking these questions, some at all. Others believe it they should just be voluntary, and that's coalesced into a House that has consistently tried to degrade and to defund the American Community Survey.
Phil Sparks is our guest this hour, and he is co-director of the Census Project. It's a stakeholder organization that is advocating for full funding for the decennial census and also for the American Communities Survey. Who'd have thought there was such controversy and bipartisan bickering over the census and the American Community Survey? We're talking about that this hour and welcoming your phone calls. Here is how you reach the conversation with Phil. The number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well at KDunn. Show. Maybe some of you have received one of those long-form questionnaires sent out to 3.5 million Americans each year. I'd be interested in what your thoughts were when you received it, if you thought it was intrusive, if you thought it was helpful in planning where federal dollars are going in many, many areas, how long it took for you to fill this out, whether or not you think it's valuable information, the uses of the census. I'm interested in asking Phil about the questions, because I would imagine if you took a person from 1790 to 2015 and had them fill out one of these questionnaires, it would be interesting to know how many of the questions would even make any sense. We'll be with you in just one moment. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, two phone calls as we discuss the census and the controversy over the yearly American Community Survey. We start our calls with Stella in Sturgeon Bay. Hello, Stella.
Hi.
Hi.
I have my question refers back to your statement that all personal data, the name and personal data, is stripped almost immediately from these census responses. And I know that censuses are a very fundamental and key genealogical research tool, that people will go back and check censuses to find where their relatives lived and where they moved to. And how do those two things jibe?
No, you ask a good question. In fact, you're quite right that the Census Bureau, after 72 years, you can get yours if you're that long alive, or your parents or grandparents' actual census data. And there's two things that happened. When I took the census form when I was in graduate school, I had the form in my hand. It had the name of the resident. It had the information that the resident had given me for that. It then went to the census office. The census office aggregated that data for purposes of using it for the purposes that I just talked about, and the form itself goes to another place, the archives of the United States, and there it is for 72 years until they make arrangements to release it in data form. But it has the same protections as does the as to the ones that's been stripped off. I mean, and you can't get into it for that long. But you're quite right. Archivists use this. I'm looking forward to going and finding out what my grandfather did in the 1930s and 1940s from the census data someday.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Stella, very much for your call. Jim in St. Paul is next. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I'm actually from St. Paul, but I'm driving through Wisconsin on my way up there.
Uh-huh.
And I worked as part of the 2010 decennial, and I know we were talking about the fact that the 2020 might have an electronic option. Do you know where that stands?
Yeah, exactly. In fact, that's one of the bugaboos with the funding for the 2020 census. They want to move to a internet-based census so that you could get a form, and the form would then direct you to the internet, and with a password, then you could fill out your census form that way. It would be not only simpler for you, but it would save the government tons of money. It's estimated that if we used IT technology for the 2020 census, that the government would save $5 billion, and it would be also more accurate. Well, now, one of the drawbacks here is that you got to acquire the equipment and the operators early. You can't just order the equipment a couple months before the census comes along. So it's actually the reason why they've asked for additional money in this next budget, so they can begin acquiring both the expertise and the equipment. And so the fact that the Congress doesn't want to give up money for this ramp up that would allow us to do a internet-based census and save $5 billion is really penny wise and pound foolish. It makes no sense, and anybody who knows anything about technology understands you got to get this stuff set up first if you're going to save money and modernize the census. But that's where we stand right now.
Yeah, because I know we were messaging on the fact that it would be an option. You know, the electronic was an option in addition to filling it out. But I wondered where that stood. But if you go on, say, jobs.com, you'll see that they are starting to hire, and a lot of the positions are IT related. So
exactly right. In fact, the American Community Survey, again, just testing 3.5 million households a year, is now internet-based, and it is the test bed for the 2020 census, and it has worked pretty significantly. The last figures I saw from the Census Bureau are that of those 3.5 million households each year that fill out the American Community Survey, something around 40% of the people are now filling it out via the internet, and it's cut down the cost already, the American Community Survey. So it's really one of those win-wins. It makes the census less expensive and more efficient.
Now, as I did, I think about 5 months ago, I had it emailed to me, and it took me a while, I think about 40 minutes, and there were some questions. I could see where some folks may find them intrusive, but, you know, with my background, I worked my way through it, and hit the send button, so it wasn't too bad.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and that was a good question, just simply because that is the argument that's going on in Congress right now.
Well, I'm all for it, so keep up the good work. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim, very much for your call. Rob in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Rob.
Hi.
You said the response rate was 95%. Does that include the mail-ins and the non-response follow-ups, or
yes, it's the whole thing. And this is, we are still the premier, you know, meaning the United States, we're still the premier statistical agency in the world. And in fact, even what we're doing in terms of internet response is ahead of the rest of the world, and basically we're the leaders. So getting 95% plus on the American Community Survey and 98 to 99% on the short form every 10 years are just outstanding, and apparently, and frankly, are a tribute to the residents of the United States. We still understand why this is important, and we fill out the form.
Are there still plans to deploy non-response follow-ups?
Oh, sure. You have to do that, especially. Yeah, let's take the American Community Survey, which is now using this method. You've got transient populations, you've got populations of color, you've got low-income populations that may not have access to the internet, so you always have to have a non-response follow-up, and you've got just a mobile population. When I was a census taker, I sometimes had to go to her house four or five times, and the irony is I took the census in my hometown. I knew pretty much who was there. I just didn't realize that they were so active and weren't at home when I thought they should be. So you've always got to have census takers on the ground to follow up to the electronic response and the internet.
It was quite a trip. Recluses, posse comitatus, migrant farm workers, homeschoolers. They were hard to track down and hard to interview.
All of those things. Absolutely every one of those things. But generally speaking, they all in the end did fill out the form.
Thanks very much for the call. How do you find people who are homeless?
There is a special survey, actually, where on a particular series of days and nights towards the end of the taking of the census, particularly cities and towns organize an effort to try to go out to the homeless shelters, but the alleys and the shacks to try to get the data from the homeless.
And when you talk about those who are non-responsive follow-ups, these are people who did not answer the questionnaires on the American Community Survey and the census, and so you call them or you knock on the door, or what do you do?
Both. Yeah, you do both. What happens is a couple weeks after the survey goes out by mail, the Census Bureau knows at that point who has and who hasn't responded, then the census takers themselves on the ground are deployed to those households and given the household addresses for those households that haven't responded. So you go and knock on their door. And if they don't come around the first time, then there's sort of a schedule. You try it, let's say, once in the morning on a weekday. You try it once in the evening on a weekend. You know, in other words, you vary when you go see them until you get the response.
Now, the Atlantic article that caught our attention and thus resulted in this show, it talked about some of the criticism of the Census Bureau. It said that the Bureau is not helped, and I quote here from the article, by its track record. The 2010 census cost twice as much as the survey in 2000, a total that included $3 billion spent on new handheld devices that didn't work.
Guilty. The Census Bureau completely botched an attempt to go to an electronic census, at least to the extent that the census taker doing non-response follow-up was going to have a device that was going to be built by the Census Bureau so that all the data could be entered into an electronic handheld device and therefore then communicated to the Census Bureau. They didn't have the technology to do this, and it cost the American taxpayer $2 to $3 billion, and it was a complete waste of money, and they botched it, and the government has to admit that. But this time around, technology is advanced. They're not going to use their own devices. It'll be an app. And we all know that those are battle tested because we've all got them. So it's a much simpler process, and thankfully the technology has advanced in 10 years, and they won't have that problem again. But it did add considerable cost to the 2010 census.
Phil, when our caller said he filled out the form and it took 40 minutes for the American Community Survey, give us a better idea of what the questions are, other than we already said, how many toilets do you have? What else do you ask? That's a fairly lengthy survey.
Yes. For instance, I think I cited the other one that seems to be a bugaboo for some people, and that is, what time do you leave for work? How do you do it? In other words, mass transportation, car, you know, some other method, bicycle maybe even. What time do you return? That's a question. There are questions about how many children you have in school, if at all. Obviously, that relates to education. There are health questions. How many times a year do you visit a hospital? Do you need health care? There are questions about veterans. Are you a veteran? Are you a disabled veteran? So there's a variety. As I say, all of these questions are mandated by Congress. So they're not pitched out of the sky because a demographer or a statistician at the Census Bureau just wanted to know the answer. These are all questions that come from law, in which the law basically says we the policymakers, want to know how our money's being spent, and we're requiring the government and the Census Bureau to come up with data on how many people utilize this service that we're funding and providing.
I was thinking during our conversation of somebody taking a survey in 1790 and doing a time travel to 2015.
It would be a different kind of question.
I'll bet they couldn't answer many of the questions from today, could they?
No, they couldn't, and there'd be much more basic questions. Like a question in 1790 would probably be, do you own a house? And if you don't own a house, where are you staying now? Much more basic than what we're talking about here today.
And, of course, do you have toilets? Wouldn't be indoor plumbing, wouldn't be on it.
Well, and of course, that's exactly right, because it would be the other way around.
Right.
It would probably be 98% of the population didn't have indoor plumbing or anything that they could imagine that would be indoor plumbing.
Yeah. Tell me more about your taking the census. How long ago was that, and what kind of experiences you had in knocking on doors? Were people welcoming?
I would say, first off, I did it when I was in graduate school in 1970, I was in graduate school. I did it, what they try to do is they try to recruit from the neighborhoods where people live. They try to recruit residents and people who are familiar with the neighborhood. So as I say, I came from a small southern town, and so, actually I met my wife, who was a census taker too.
That's so nice.
And it basically, you go through about a week's training, and they emphasize a number of things. They emphasize confidentiality and courtesy, and how you're going to go about it. They tell you how the forms need to be filled out if they haven't been filled out, and they give you sort of a method to go back to what they call the non-response households, as I talked about. So that's what they do, and it's a process. It's interesting because in my day, it was piecework. In other words, I got, 50 cents for a short form and 75 cents or a dollar to get a filled out long form. Nowadays, it's an hourly rate, which it should be.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, when I started off, I thought, boy, this is going to be easy. And I thought, I'll have this all, my section all finished off in 2 or 3 weeks. Well, 2 or 3 months later, I was still going back for non-response follow-up because the folks that I thought should be home weren't home, and I couldn't estimate for them. I had to get them, nail them.
But you had no problem in courting your wife and she courting you, coming up with lists of questions you could ask each other. Right?
Well, that's right. We could talk over coffee about our triumphs and our tribulations out walking the pavement in our neighborhoods.
Well, Phil, that sounds like a short story or something, doesn't it?
I don't want to elicit too much sympathy, but it is how I met my wife.
I know. It's a good story. We welcome more phone calls. We're talking about the census this hour and how it's become a political disagreement and why it's become a disagreement. There is the long form we're familiar with every 10 years, but there also is an American Community Survey, which is done once a year. And one of our listeners who called in said it takes about 40 minutes to fill out. There is some current concern, and it's mostly Republican concern, that the questions are too intrusive, that it's a bit like, the NSA looking into the lives of people, and do we need to really do this? And there are further questions about money. Republicans arguing questions are too intrusive, and also there is House-passed spending legislation that would make it voluntary by prohibiting the government from enforcing criminal penalties, which can reach $5,000 against people who refuse to participate. And there are 3.5 million of those Americans who receive a long form once a year. And there is a funding concern for the 2020 census. So we're looking at all of that this hour with a guest who has a long history with the census. He's co-director Phil Sparks of the Census Project. It advocates for full funding for the decennial census and also for the American Community Survey. He is former associate director for communications of the U.S. Census Bureau. We welcome your phone calls. Here's how you reach our conversation, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're also on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Some of you, I'm sure, have received those long forms. We'd like to hear about your response to that. Do you think that some of these questions are too intrusive? Do you think the Census Bureau receives too much money? Does it need to be mostly internet-based now, which would make it less expensive and perhaps easier to complete? Do you think that these battles over the census are politically motivated, or it makes sense to have disagreement about them? We'll welcome more phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's welcome more phone calls. And Jeremy in Madison is our next caller for Phil Sparks, co-director of the Census Project. Hi, Phil. Jeremy.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, how are you?
Good, good. I got the survey in 2010, and I'm a family of six, and I thought that their questions were very intrusive, and I honestly thought it was none of their business what they were asking. Plus, I've taken surveys before where they've sent me like $5 in the mail, and I felt a lot better about taking that survey than being threatened with being penalized $5,000 for not taking.
What did you think was intrusive, Jeremy? What kinds of questions?
Well, like you just mentioned, how many kids do I have? What's their nationality? What are their ages? What school do they attend, or do they go to school? What do I take for transportation to work? I just marked that I marked other, and I wrote down spaceship. He probably wouldn't like that, but I just felt it was none of his business.
Phil.
Yeah, no, Jeremy, I appreciate the reaction that you have. That certainly there are some people that feel that way. But just to reiterate, the questions that were asked about school trigger money for your school in Madison, Wisconsin. The questions about when you left for work and came home trigger money for roads and transportation in Madison, Wisconsin. These are not questions that are drawn, just from blank sheet. And they're actually mandated, and the Congress reviews this process of the questions every 10 years, and in fact will be doing it again in the next year or so. And I should also add, I don't want to get too much into my job at the Census Bureau, but in the 20 or 30 years that I've been familiar with this questionnaire, the Congress has added questions, not taken them out, and I will cite that when I worked at the Census Bureau, a Republican majority leader of the Senate added a question, and I got in trouble because I wasn't sure whether one should be added or not, and pretty much the Senate majority leader prevailed, he was a Republican, not a Democrat, but it is something that is, I think, in terms of remuneration. I just see it as a duty of being a resident of a particular area. You and I may just kind of have to disagree on whether you should be compensated for it or not.
Well, what would you say when you got a response, how do you get to work? I take a spaceship, which is how Jeremy answered that. What do you do with a response like that? Do you toss the form, or do you call him or go knock on the door?
No. Once the form is answered, whatever way it's answered, it just goes into the system. And the bottom line is that the response rate at over 95%. there are some that, that people that give answers that are non-responsive to the form, but there's such a wide and broad number of people who do respond that statistically it's not significant, and therefore we just move on. The Census Bureau does.
Hmm. Thanks, Jeremy, so much for your call. John in Madison, hi.
Hi.
Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, John. How are you?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you fine. Go right ahead.
Oh, okay, good. I'm a Democrat, but I think it's important to recognize a particular problem of lack of confidentiality that Republicans and conservatives might worry about. That was in 1942 when the Census Bureau did release information about names and addresses of Japanese Americans to the FBI.
Hmm.
I have an article right in front of me from the Scientific American, dated March 30th, 2007, called Confirmed, the U.S. Census Bureau Gave Up Names of Japanese Americans in World War II. The only other thing I have to say about that is, thinking back, since it was in 1942, and since the Census Bureau collected information in 1940, this means that the Census Bureau violated any promise of confidentiality it had made back in 1940 when it collected that information and then released it. What happened was a War Powers Act changed the law, making it possible for the Census Bureau to do this.
Hmm.
Now, I just wonder what the comment of the presenter might be about that.
Mm-hmm. Phil?
Actually, I think the Scientific American article was a little off, but it makes it no less compromising. What they released to the FBI were basically clusters of people, people's households, and Japanese Americans living on the West Coast. It wasn't hard to figure out who were Japanese Americans. If, let's say, 45% of the census tract in some area in the Bay Area in San Francisco indicated that they were Japanese Americans, the FBI could just come in and talk to every household and figure out who the Japanese Americans were. But it's still not a good thing. And as the listener said, it was compelled by the federal government, but they didn't release actual what they call microdata. They didn't release individual data, but it did allow a roundup. And it's not a good thing.
I might respond.
Yes, go ahead, John.
The article specifically cites a report by Margo Anderson at the Population Association. She's from the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee.
Norwell.
And the article does mention the West Coast data at the neighborhood level, but also says that the Census Bureau complied with an August 4th, 1943 request by Treasury Secretary Henry Morgenthau for the names and locations of all people of Japanese ancestry in the Washington, D.C. area, and those records were released.
I think I just have to disagree. I'm aware of what happened on the West Coast, and it wasn't a good thing.
Thank you, John,
okay,
for alerting us to that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Good to hear from you. Let's go to Marie in Jefferson. Hi, Marie.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that when we received the package requesting information, we were just stunned at how much was there to fill out. And we started to, my husband and I started to fill it out and decided that we'd rather do it on the Internet. And that's the way we did it between the two of us. But I'm not as concerned as I used to be about the questions. And I know that there are some that some people would be offended at. And we weren't sure why they were being asked, but listening to this program today makes me feel more secure about it. Maybe
other people won't feel that way, but
I do. And we were just as puzzled over some of the questions as people have said.
The other thing that reminds me, and it's a good point, you filled your form out electronically. There are now special buttons on the form so that a participant in the American Community Survey, and indeed for the next decennial census, if they fill it out on the Internet, can press a button for every question and see the reason the question was asked and how it relates to your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So that's something that our electronic, our electronic age is now going to allow much more transparency in terms of how the form is used and what was the reason for the question being asked.
Thank you, Marie, very much for the call. So is there a letter that comes with all of this that explains,
yes,
and it explains what the penalty will be?
Yes.
Yeah.
And frankly, one of your listeners said that it's $5,000. It basically doesn't say that on the form, but it is $5,000. Now I have to hasten to add that, as far as I know, for the last 50 years, nobody's ever been prosecuted for not filling out the census form. And in fact, the Census Project would be in favor of reducing the fine to its original status, which was like $100 before it was changed 20 years ago by the Congress. So we believe that there should just simply be a form that says it's mandatory. That's what it says on the form as you get it, and that the fine, if there was ever one that was prosecuted, should be reduced greatly, because that's stupid.
Yeah, it's a pretty hefty fine, isn't
it? Yes, it was actually part of... we're going through this as the Supreme Court, where in the health care bill, somebody made a mistake in terms of the drafting, and now the drafting question is before the Supreme Court. Well, the same thing happened here. About 25 years ago, the major laws called RICO were all codified in the United States, and they codified this one to the penalty of the minimum for RICO fines, which is to track down gangsters and their money, and made it $5,000, and nobody ever went back and changed it. So it's another one. It's a mistake by government, and it should be changed back to what it was.
And you've told us a little bit about this in the minute that we have left. What are the preparations right now? What are you doing now to ready everybody for the census 5 years hence?
Well, what the census has got to begin to do at this point, the middle part of the decade, is to operationalize the 2020 census. It's got to buy IT equipment. It's got to get people who understand how to use the Internet, et cetera, experts who can take in all this information. Because think about the census. It's going to be done in April of 2020, and by the summer of 2020, everybody, all 350 million Americans at the time, have to give their data to the government in order to get this done. That's a short period of time. It's time sensitive. So you've got to have the equipment, you've got to have the funding in order to be able to do this. And the American Community Survey, of course, is done every year. And if you don't get the funding, it's going to disadvantage rural areas of the country.
Mm. And we do have a message from email from Sue, who's an American Community Surveyor, and she said they don't ask about toilets anymore.
Well, it's possible that they've taken it out, but I don't think so.
I guess we'll have to find out. Phil,
I guess so.
If anybody knows about the census, sir, it's you. You're a wealth of information. Thank you so much for being with us.
And thank you.
Our pleasure. Phil Sparks, co-director of the Census Project, also a former associate director for communications of the U.S. Census Bureau. Thanks to Judith Sears-Poisson for producing this program, and thanks to K.P. Whaley for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Tomorrow, during this hour, we'll be looking at controversial changes to shared governance and tenure that are a part of the proposed Wisconsin budget. Sure to be a lively conversation during this hour at this time, mañana. Please stay with us. Great hour. We're going to learn more than we have known for years and years and years about Harper Lee, hour two of our program, right after the news, coming up now from NPR.